deepened. I pulled myself closer against him, my bloodied hands slipping against the skin behind his neck. My heart hammered as I caught sight of silhouettes of the Portique gang up ahead. What is Viggo thinking? Is he going after them? While carrying me? Has he gone mad? As I had become almost fully convinced that he was chasing after the criminals, Vigo's direction diverged from them. He swerved diagonally to our left while they were moving decidedly right. The trees became denser as he continued to run, and the bullets no longer reached us. The gunshots grew fainter, and the loudest noises became Vigo's heavy boots crunching in the brushwood and his harried breathing so close to my ear. I could practically feel his heart pounding against me. I have never witnessed Viggo so tense. For the first time since I'd met him, he showed fear. I needed first aid. I needed to visit a hospital. The gushing of water came within earshot. Then a clearing came into view, through which ran a river. Its surface glistened in the moonlight as we approached. Finally, Viggo came to a stop. He looked down at me. "Can you stand?"
I'm not sure," he exhaled.
"Okay." Lowering me gently, he seated me at the edge of the bank. He proceeded to remove his coat, belt, and gun, and hang it on a branch. Then he returned to me, wearing the same shirt and pants he'd worn earlier in the day before the fight. He sat down next to me and swung his legs into the water, and the next thing I knew, he dropped into it, submerging his upper chest, still fully clothed. Apparently he was tall and steady, enough to touch the bottom, even with the current. He winced.
"It's cold, but we have to get you cleaned up. There was no time back in that stream."
I examined myself more closely. It wasn't just my hands, arms, and face that had gotten splattered with blood. There were stains on my neck, upper chest, lower torso, and clothes. I removed the torn garments, balled them up, and discarded them in the river. Now I wore only my underwear, which was also stained.
"Come," he coaxed softly.
My body tensed up as I slipped off the bank's edge into his open arms. My chest constricted, my skin breaking out in goosebumps. I wound my arms around Vigo's neck and pulled my body flush against his for support amidst the current and for warmth.
"You're worried I could be punished for killing that man?"
I panted against his hair. I felt him swallow against my shoulder. A pause ensued.
"Do you want to know what happened to Miriam? My wife?"
His voice was hoarse.
"What?"
I whispered, as my stomach clenched with guilt at the thought that I already knew.
"She was hanged for defending herself in a situation not all that different from this. She killed an attacker without a neutral witness."
Vigo's chest heaved beneath me. I sensed an undercurrent of guilt in his tone.
"Does he blame himself for her death?"
I'm not saying the same insane rule would apply to you. Even the court doesn't care much about what happens to these Portique dregs. But it's not worth the risk."
He created a few inches gap between us. His eyes studied my arms before he began to run a palm along them, down to my hands, rinsing me of the blood. The current was doing a good job of cleaning my torso and chest on its own.
"I'll say I killed him if anyone questions it," he continued. "I planted my handprint on the knife."
"There'll be no consequences for you?"
"None to speak of."
"How will you explain both of us being sopping wet when we return?"
I asked, shivering as one of his hands ascended to tenderly brush against the side of my face.
"I'll tell them one of the guys split from the group with you, and I found the two of you crossing a river, where I headed him off. He got away, but I managed to get a hold of you."
"You're a good liar."
He gritted his teeth and held my gaze.
"Sometimes that's what's required to do what's right in Patris."
I looked down, experiencing a spike of discomfort.
"Okay, I think you're done."
He gathered me to him and moved us back to the bank. Climbing out, he settled me on the ground before heading to the branch where he'd hung his possessions. He retrieved the coat and brought it to me, hanging its heavy weight around my shoulders,
The smell of him immediately made me feel safe and protected.
Better remove your underwear, too. Just throw it in the river and keep my coat.
I breathed in.
Okay.
Vigo turned his back on me while I maneuvered my way out of my bra and panties. I hurled them into the river before pulling on his long coat. I fastened up the zipper to my neck.
You can turn around, I murmured.
He turned and bent down and scooped me up. As he rose, and I tightened my grip around his shoulders, I realized my hands were trembling. Aside from the cold, I was still recovering from shock. When Vigo began to run again, gripping me as though he feared I might loosen my hold, my cheek fell against his shoulder. His fear was not unfounded. I fought to maintain consciousness, but exhaustion finally claimed me. I faded out. Chapter 27. I woke to the noise of whirring rotors. I was lying on something soft, narrow but comfortable. Someone's palm was pressed on my forehead. I opened my eyes. Vigo's handsome face hung over me. His hair was wet and tied back. His dark brows had been deeply furrowed, but became less so as our eyes locked. He removed his hand from my head. I tried to sit up, but he pushed me back down. We were in the belly of some kind of aircraft. The walls were rounded and lined with metal panels. This was the first time I'd ever been in an aircraft, let alone flown in one. The sensation was unsettling. My ears felt blocked. I was lying on a cushioned stretcher, Vigo sitting beside me on a stool. Memories of the night washed over me, and I relived every terrifying moment. Waking up in the dark and the cold, the lack of control, the fear, the pain, the humiliation, the anger, the relief. I was still wrapped in Vigo's coat. I felt its inner lining brush against my bare skin. It took the edge off my still damp hair and body. I reached up to my face. I had a bandage over my nose. I stared up at Vigo.
How did you find me?
Thanks to your husband, Vigo replied. His voice was low, like he hadn't spoken in a while.
Lee?
I breathed.
Where is he?
He's back in the city, Vigo explained, but he was able to communicate to me your location. The moment I realized you were gone, I called him, and he was able to guide me and my team.
But how would Lee know?
Now it was Vigo's turn to look confused.
You didn't know that he has you tracked?
My breath hitched.
No, I didn't know that.
Since when had Lee been tracking me? I had looked at his computer only recently to watch Vigo's red dot on the map, and I hadn't shown up there. As I turned my mind back to the last few days, I realized he must have done it the night he got annoyed with me. The night I'd told him I had encouraged Vigo to enter the PFL and potentially mess up our whole schedule. The night Lee had first kissed me. Whatever Lee's motives, be they born out of some kind of possessiveness or not, I could only be grateful now that he had done it. Otherwise, I would have likely died in that dark basement.
I did know, I lied, rubbing my head. I just, with everything, I didn't put two and two together.
As soon as we touch down in the city, I'll take you to the hospital. Your husband said that he will be waiting there for you.
Okay, I said, swallowing. My mind turned back to earlier. Hey, what happened with the fight?
Forget the fight, he growled. I left the arena as soon as I found you gone. It was that damn attendant, wasn't it? The one who told you to stay in the room.
I nodded. And the runaway criminal from the other day.
The man I killed.
I explained to Vigo who else I'd seen, including Ada. Vigo scowled.
That arena needs better screening as to who gets in and out. As for the others, I still have men back there making arrests. You remember we saw members from that gang sitting in the square after the Rosencruz fight?
They were watching you, probably trying to find a way to get at you then, too. The gangs of Porticue don't take kindly to women rising above their role. God forbid when it's against one of their own. They took your felling one of them as an insult to their entire clan.
They're insane, I breathed.
They'd call themselves law-upholding, Vigo said darkly.
We lapsed into a span of silence. Trying to turn my mind away from the horrors of the night, I thought once again of Vigo's missed fight. He had just walked out, abandoning crews, the organizers, and thousands of fans. Guilt gripped me. Thank you, Vigo, I whispered, my throat thick. He didn't acknowledge my words. He averted his gaze over his shoulder.
How much longer? He called to an unseen colleague. 5 minutes, a man called back.
We sat wordlessly for the rest of the journey. On descending, Vigo slipped his arms beneath me, picking me up again. He carried me out of the aircraft, and we emerged on a landing strip on top of a towering building. Surrounding us was Patris City. How far is the hospital? I asked him as he carried me through a door which led to a stairwell.
This is the hospital.
His answer came as a disappointment, which confused me. I'd been beaten up. I needed to see a doctor and be treated. But somehow I'd been expecting a little more delay until meeting Lee again. Until leaving Vigo. Vigo wound down the stairwell and pushed us through a set of double doors, which led us to a bustling hallway. Doctors, all male, of course, were moving in and out of rooms, pushing carts, speaking with patients. And then we spotted Lee, sitting tensely on a bench at the end of the corridor. He sprang up as soon as he spotted us and hurried to close the distance. His face was deathly pale. His chest heaved in relief as Vigo transferred me to his arms, Lee's citrusy scent overtaking Vigo's.
Good man, Vigo, Lee said hoarsely. Good man.
Vigo merely nodded, his green eyes locking with mine for a second longer, before he turned and disappeared down the crowded corridor. Chapter 28 Lee and I didn't get the opportunity to talk much about what had happened before I was called in for my appointment with Dr. Millman, which turned out to be a lot more intrusive than I had anticipated. In Matris, all doctors were females, with the exception of just one male who was the son of one of Queen Rena's courtiers. I guess now I knew what it felt like for Matris males every time they needed an examination. Dr. Millman focused on doing everything he could for my injuries. Stitching up the cuts, applied a thick white cream to my burns before bandaging them, and after Lee returned to the room, he informed me that I could leave. He equipped us with several bottles of medication and cream, along with extra bandages, and said that the best thing I could do for recovery was rest. The doctor arranged for a wheelchair for Lee to borrow, so he didn't have to carry me everywhere. I was still feeling dizzy whenever I stood, but the doctor said that should resolve itself in a day or two. Lee wheeled me downstairs and outside to the road where he hailed a taxi. Once inside, I found myself rehashing everything that had happened, with Lee asking for every harrowing detail. I was relieved when we arrived back at Lee's house, and once inside, he carried me up the stairs to my room. He laid me down on the bed and tucked me beneath the covers.
"How are you feeling now?" he asked, looking me over with concern as he stood by my bedside.
My eyelids felt heavy as lead. I needed to sleep. Lee took the hint.
"I'll leave you alone," he said. "You have to recover as quickly as possible. We have only 4 days left. Whatever happens, we can't let this interfere with the banquet."
Chapter 29
The Banquet.
As much as I tried to put off thinking about it, the time was drawing too close now. As much as I struggled to continue brushing it aside, I couldn't.
I could no longer keep it thrust down to the depths of my subconscious.
Only 4 days left. 4 days and I will be calling Vigo to the scene of the crime. 4 days and I will be framing him for an atrocity he didn't commit. 4 days and I will have ruined his life, maybe given the court reason to take it from him.
None of my previous techniques for numbing myself worked anymore. Maybe it was the stillness I was forced to inhabit, the quiet of my room, as even Lee left me alone for hours on end.
It was as if every emotion I'd kept pent up since the beginning of this mission came flooding out at once, overwhelming me, drowning me. How could I have ever agreed to do this? Vigo had rescued me from death, and here I was contemplating in only a few sleeps' time, pulling the rug out from under his feet, stabbing him in the back in the worst possible way. I had made him trust me enough to show his vulnerability, the loss of his wife, his struggle with Patrian society, and his readiness even now to defy the rules. I had become his friend. Why else would he have left the fight to save me if he didn't value our friendship? If he didn't like me? He could have informed Lee of my disappearance, and then left the rest of his team to look for me. He'd been off duty at the time anyway. He hadn't needed to leave the fight for me, nor had he needed to cover up the murder I'd committed. And yet, he'd done all this. He'd foregone the massive money he could have made from that fight, angered thousands of people, and maybe even put his sparkling future career on the line. All for me. I shook my head as I lay in bed with my eyes closed. No, no, I can't do this. I can't do this.
The hours slipped away at terrifying speed. Soon night had come around again, then morning. Lee's brief appearances to check in on me came as simply blips in time, brief interruptions to my agonizing over Vigo. He informed me that he'd washed Vigo's coat and taken it to the warden's head office for him to collect. Alistair called the evening of the third day before the banquet to speak to both of us. Lee told me that it was best not to tell him about the kidnapping, that it would only freak him out. So I told Alistair that everything was going smoothly, even as I was screaming inside. I told him that Lee and I would be ready for the banquet, even as I ached.
I didn't know what to do or what to say, if anything, to Lee. I felt trapped in a web of my own making, tangled up in knots with no hand to free me.
Although I should be focusing on nothing but my recovery, I was barely even aware of my physical state anymore. I used the cream and medication as the doctor prescribed, mechanically, by rote, barely even bothering to check the progress of my healing in the mirror.
I was too far gone, my mind lost on a different stratum. Do I tell Lee what I'm feeling?
I feared his reaction, and I didn't want to lay any more stress on him than he was under already. But I finally reached a precipice where I felt I would lose my mind if I kept my emotions bottled up even an hour longer. So when I heard him return to the house, I called for him. He came climbing up the stairs and entered my room, sitting on the edge of my bed.
"Are you okay?" he asked, tensing.
I propped myself upright against the headboard and drew in a breath.
"Lee," my voice came out uneven, "I don't know that I can do this."
"I can't do this." I could hardly believe what I was thinking.
"I have a reunion with my brother on the line."
Lee heaved a sigh. He reached out a hand and cupped my knee, squeezing gently.
"Violet, I understand your nerves. In spite of my preparation, I still find myself doubting. Can we really pull this off? Will we get out alive, etc., etc.? You need to stop thinking. We have only 2 days left, and then there will only be doing. 2 days, and you should be out of here, back home, safe. 2 days left, that's all. So just keep it together, okay?"
"But Vigo," I croaked, "he saved my life, he sacrificed..."
"Violet,
Lee said, sterner this time at the mention of Vigo. Remember what I said. Don't lose sight of the bigger picture. In fact, you should only be thinking of the bigger picture, nothing else. That's all you're here for. Once you keep your mind focused on the goal, all the details become insignificant. Just moving pieces on the board. Pawns in the game, you understand?
I didn't. I neither understood nor agreed with what Lee was saying. I could no longer accept that implicating Vigo was the only way. And yet, even I could see that there was no point continuing the discussion. As much as I wished I could speak honestly with Lee to release some of the pressure escalating within me, he was a closed book. It was far too late in the game to be bringing up feelings and sentiments. None of it mattered. In Lee's mind, the plan was already chalked out for us, set in stone. After his preparation in the lab, the explosives he'd set up, the destruction they would cause, and the lives they would claim, there was no moving backward. We were on a freight train with broken brakes. We had to execute, or die trying. But as Lee left me to rest again and get an early night, I knew that I had become a different kind of passenger. The kind of passenger to leap from a runaway train. The kind who would not wait until the end. Chapter 30. Once midnight fell, I swung my legs off the bed. I stood up and didn't feel dizzy. I walked around the room, my back straight, head up high. Still no dizziness. Then I moved to the bathroom and stared at myself in the mirror. My face was still bruised, of course, and the stitching beneath my eye still fresh. I searched my drawers to check my mustache and facial hair hadn't been removed, and found them still there, along with the adhesive and my wig. I padded to the door and opened it a crack. The corridor outside was dark. I poked my head out fully, then stepped out. I couldn't hear any sounds indicating that Lee was downstairs, so I headed to his room and pressed my ear against the door. Deep, heavy breathing. He was asleep. I hurried back to my room and applied the facial hair and wig in record time, then pulled on a jacket. I didn't need to bother with the bulky bodysuit. It was nighttime, so hopefully nobody would see me anyway. Finishing in the bathroom, I approached my bed and stuffed 3 spare cushions beneath the blanket to make it look like my form was lying there, in case Lee came in for a brief glance during the night. I needed to buy myself as much time as possible. Samuel was asleep in his basket outside the kitchen, and I hardly dared to breathe as I made my way to the front door. I picked up Lee's chain of keys hanging from the coat rack, pulled on a pair of shoes, and then slowly, carefully, went about opening the door. The metal was well-oiled, and the mechanism opened with a soft click. I closed it and locked it behind me before heading round the building to see Lee's motorcycle that was leaning against the wall. Even though I was able to drive whatever vehicle I wanted in Matrix, I had never actually learned. I had spent too much time in detention to have come across the chance. Now, as I rolled the motorcycle out of the driveway, out of view from the house, I felt terrified. I barely knew how to start it. Everything I was about to do was based on witnessing Lee and Vigo drive their motorcycles. But this was the only way I could make it to Vigo's house. This was the only way. After strapping one of the helmets to my head and pushing the motorcycle a comfortable distance away from Lee's house, I dared attempt to start it up at the side of the road. It took a minute before I managed it. It came alive more easily than I expected. Now I had to hope that riding it would come just as smoothly. It didn't. As I hopped on, I immediately lost balance, and my right leg almost got crushed beneath the falling machine. It took a good 5 minutes for me to feel comfortable raising my feet from the ground again. I revved the engine, causing the motorcycle to jerk forward. I almost lost balance a second time. I feared I might swerve off the road before I ever reached Vigo's. But there was no time for second thoughts. I couldn't afford to entertain doubts. I spurred the vehicle ahead as slowly as I could without having the engine conk out due to the slope we were ascending,
before gradually building confidence and rolling faster. I had two advantages, at least. First, the roads up here weren't busy. And second, I knew the way to Vigo's cabin fairly well. So I found myself hurtling through the night, the road slipping away beneath me. Framing Vigo wasn't the only way. I knew it wasn't. There had to be other scapegoats we could use. We could pin the whole operation on the men of Porticue. Leave a message behind on a building in big red letters or something, declaring it to be an act of rebellion. They were already anarchists, so this could follow on naturally from their recent kidnapping of me. Whatever the case, once I'd seen Vigo, Lee and I would have no choice but to scramble around for another solution to prevent the blame falling on Matris. Lee would be mad at me, but I wouldn't care. We'd figure out a last-minute alternative, because we'd have to. We both had too much at stake to fail in this mission. Drops of rain began to fall. Drops which soon multiplied and came down harder and heavier, until I was drenched to my underwear. Still, it didn't matter. Almost there now. Almost there. I was shivering by the time I recognized the turn down Vigo's lane. The rain had become torrential, and it was a wonder that I hadn't skidded off the road entirely. I trundled down the dirt track, fast turning to thick mud, and skidded to a stop 10 feet before Vigo's cabin. No gas lamps shone through the gaps in the shutters. Perhaps he wasn't even home. I had to pray that he was only asleep. Discarding the motorcycle, I stood, my knees feeling shaky from the journey. The first thing I did was reach for my fake hair and tear it off, shoving it into my pockets. I might not even need it again after tonight. My blood pounding in my ears, I hurried to Vigo's porch and scaled the steps to his front door. I hesitated to catch a breath, then knocked 4 times. No answer. I knocked again, 5 times, more loudly. Still nothing. Oh no, don't say he's out after all. I left the porch, striding back out into the rain, and circled the building. Shutters covered every window, and I couldn't see through a single one of them. Moving back toward the front of the building, I stopped dead in my tracks. A light had been lit. As I turned a corner, at the bottom of the porch stairs, was Vigo, wearing nothing but boxer shorts. His hair was mussed, his eyelids hooded. I had obviously woken him up. But his expression came to life on realizing his intruder was me. "Violet!" he gaped. "What are you doing here?" His eyes shot to the motorcycle, his face falling. "Where is your husband?" I stood rooted to my spot as though paralyzed. "He's not here," I rasped. Vigo launched forward and grabbed me by the hand, pulling me toward his porch, up the stairs and through to his cabin. He slammed the door behind us, towering over me in the hallway. He turned on me, backing me against the wall, his expression a mixture of alarm and utter confusion. "You drove here?" he demanded. My hands balled up. I nodded, holding his intense gaze. "What the hell has gotten into you? Do you know the punishment you could receive for that infraction? And that's leaving aside the fact that you've roamed across a mountain at night completely on your own. Have you forgotten what just happened to you?" He gripped my shoulders in frustration as I merely stared back at him. "Say something, damn it!" I'd gone over what I was going to say to him in my mind already. But now that I was here, standing in this stupidly narrow corridor, Vigo so close to me we were practically touching, I felt breathless, claustrophobic. I need to tell you something," I managed, my voice deeper than it should have been. His brows rose, eyes widening. "Clearly!" I couldn't go so far as to tell him the truth. Obviously, he couldn't know that I was a spy, that I had been trying to frame him all along or anything about our mission. After telling him all that, he'd likely not trust another word I said. Why should he? I had no idea how he'd react or what he'd do, and I couldn't run the risk of losing the chance to see my brother again. A chance I still was convinced that I had. I just needed to make sure that Vigo didn't come anywhere near the lab tomorrow. Even if I failed to convince Lee that the Porticue men would be better scapegoats.
Gathering confidence, I looked Vigo seriously in the eye, parting my lips to speak. But before I could utter a word, my jacket pocket vibrated. When I slipped a hand inside my pocket, it closed around my pager. I'd forgotten it was still in there. My throat was drying out. I lifted the pager and glanced at the screen.
"Say anything, and he will be assassinated."
My blood ran cold. Lee had woken up and tracked me down. I'd known all along this was a possibility, but I'd been hoping against hope that I would make it back in time. But what is Lee talking about? Have Vigo assassinated? Why? How?
"Violet," Vigo drew my attention back to him. "What's going on? Did your husband send a message?"
I hurriedly stuffed the pager back into my pocket. My first instinct was to assume that Lee had panicked on seeing me at Vigo's and was now bluffing out of desperation. Lee doesn't even have those sorts of contacts here.
Does he?
I thought back to the moving red dots on Lee's computer screen. Lee had told me that they were people whose help he'd used. I wasn't sure what extent that help could stretch, or how much he trusted them. Obviously not enough to work with him in directly stealing the egg, otherwise why did he need me? Or maybe Lee would find a way to pull off the assassination himself. I supposed it was possible that Lee wasn't bluffing.
But why? Why was assassination necessary? It was as though Lee was assuming that I'd lost myself to guilt and was about to spill everything to Vigo.
"Violet," Vigo urged.
I parted my lips, on the verge of going through with my original plan, but Lee's message had burned itself into my brain.
Assassinated.
Maybe there were other reasons he, or his mysterious helpers, would be forced to end Vigo. Reasons I wasn't aware of. Lee had said from the very beginning that Vigo was one of our biggest obstacles, and that was why Lee had sent me in to neutralize him. Only in the process, I've become neutralized myself. I'd gotten carried away, exactly what Lee had repeatedly warned me against. I tried to forecast Vigo's life in a few days' time, assuming that I went ahead with Lee's plan. Vigo would be facing death on that path, too. The state would offer him no less punishment for the crime. But maybe, down that route, there was a chance that he would find a way out. A chance that he would find some evidence to prove himself innocent. Maybe Vigo could convince the authorities to conduct an in-depth investigation into the matter. Vigo would suspect me, having received my call to the crime scene. Maybe he wouldn't even link me to Matrix. Maybe he'd think that I'd been traumatized and threatened so severely by the men of Porticue during my time captive there that I was doing their bidding and causing disruption. As I recall the brainwashed Ada, that could be a plausible assumption. And perhaps people would assume that I'd burned in the blast, so there would be no wondering where I'd gone. And I'd be back in Matrix. Maybe even already reunited with my brother by the time investigations came to any conclusion. As strange as it sounded, letting Vigo face Patris's judicial system seemed like a better chance of survival for him.
"Violet!"
Vigo clutched my shoulders and shook me again, forcing me to look him in the eye.
"What did you come to tell me about? What could have possibly been so important that you felt the need to travel to me in the middle of the night without your husband?"
In his exasperation, Vigo had moved closer to me still. I could no longer take the pressure of his imposing form in such proximity. Pushing past him, I strode into the living room, clutching my head, my back turned to him. Now, I couldn't think of a single good reason I could offer as to why I had come here. Why I had gone behind my husband's back. I might have already done irreparable damage by coming here tonight. Piqued his interest in Lee's and my relationship to a point where it should never have been piqued. Vigo entered the living room after me. His tone had become calmer, quieter, more hesitant. As he said,
"Has Lee done something to you? Did you have an argument, or..."
"No," I said, shaking my head firmly. "Nothing like that. We're okay.
My pitch rose as I repeated, "We're okay!"
The floorboards creaked. Vigo stood just a foot behind me now. I could hear his breathing, breathe in his scent. My heartbeat quickened as his hand closed gently around my shoulder, endearing me to turn around.
"Then what?"
he asked. I faced him. Blood rushed to my cheeks as I took in his tired face, his forehead lined with confusion. The stubble around his jaw had grown noticeably since the last time I'd seen him a few days ago, adding to his jaded appearance. His confusion stabbed me with guilt. But more than confused, he looked concerned, just as he had been after finding me wandering the streets alone, the second night of my arrival in Patras. As he had been when he'd held my arm tightly after our encounter with the gang members outside the Rosencruz fight. As he had been when saving me from Porticue and covering up my murder. After I'd woken up to him in that helicopter. And just now, as I'd arrived outside his house with a motorcycle in the pouring rain. Vigo Croft was a good man. Better than my Matrian upbringing had ever allowed me to imagine existed on this side of the river, or on my side. He was the best I'd known on either side. As he sighed, apparently giving up hope of ever receiving an answer from me, I no longer needed to wonder how to respond. When I gazed at his face, adrenaline surged in me. My pulse raced. For the first time, I knew exactly what to do. It didn't require any thinking, any weighing of the pros and cons. Just instinct. Pure, inescapable instinct. "If you're not going to talk, then I need to take you..." Vigo's voice trailed off as I closed the small distance between us. My arms acted of their own accord as they wound around his neck and shoulders. Then they were pulling me upward, closer, until I was standing on my tiptoes, my brows furrowed, my eyelids shut, and then my lips were on his. Heat rolled through my body. His lips were firm, voluminous, lips that cushioned mine in a way that made me want to take them in my mouth one at a time, experience their fullness slowly, thoroughly. Lips that could engulf mine if he responded. But I didn't expect him to respond. He had frozen, arms stiff at his sides, every muscle beneath his bare shoulders and chest tensed against me. Any second, I expected him to grab my arms and push me away, insist that I leave. But he didn't pry me off. Although he remained static, he was allowing me to kiss him. My chest fluttering, I dared raise my eyelids half open. His eyes were closed tight, a deep frown marring his features. He looked stricken with conflict. Still, he didn't push me away. He must have sensed I'd open my eyes, for his opened a few seconds later, only halfway, like mine. We gazed at each other like two people drowning, neither of us having the strength to surface, even in the face of sinking deeper. Then, at some point during those few dazed seconds, something sparked in Vigo's green irises. Fervor. Hunger. Need. And suddenly, my lips were no longer maintaining control. His lips moved, prying from my grasp, before returning a second later to establish dominance. His mouth claimed mine, unhurriedly at first, the way he might scope out a new opponent in the cage. Then it escalated to a strength that left me struggling to breathe. His kiss forced every muscle in my mouth to awaken as the rest of his body loosened, coming alive. His hands dove into my hair, his powerful fingers threading through its length before trailing down my back. His lips refusing to unlock from mine for even a second, he lowered himself, dragging his hands down to my thighs before hoisting me up against his hips. He moved to the nearest wall and pressed me against it. His palms ran the length from my knees to my thighs. Then they slid beneath my shirt. The coarseness of his hands against my bare skin lit me up. He stopped above my navel, his fingers curving round my waist as he held me firmly in place. He'd pinned me,
And now, he had me. His tongue parted my lips, allowing me to feel it for the first time. It brushed against the tip of mine before moving deeper, exploring, then devouring. My senses were lost in him, his scent, his taste, his hard breathing. He had overpowered me completely, and I was losing this fight, willingly losing it. When I'd moved in, I'd had no game plan, no clear idea of what I was even doing, let alone how long I'd let it last. I just felt the overwhelming need to release my tension around him, to finally provide him with a response he'd been hounding me for. Perhaps even to say goodbye. But I didn't think it would last long. Time had lost its meaning, however. My mind had become comfortably numb. Vigo's mouth, taut skin, and forceful grip became all that existed in my world. I was afraid now to pull apart, having figured out a pattern to regulate my breathing against the rhythm of his passion. I found myself slipping out of defense mode, anchoring myself higher up against him. I wrapped my legs tightly around his waist, pulling my chest flush against his. I clutched the sides of his face, relishing the prickle of his stubble beneath my fingers. Like the mountains he insisted on living among, everything about Vigo was raw. Wild. Real. He was unadulterated masculinity, from his thick waves of hair to his rough, cut-up fists. I hadn't thought it possible for one person to crave another as I did in this moment. Least of all a woman for a man. I feared we might drown even deeper that night, the two of us alone in this cabin, especially as his hands moved higher beneath my shirt, his thumbs tracing the top of my breasts, his palms grazing my bra cups. But we never got the chance to test our self-restraint. As a sharp rapping sounded at the door, Vigo and I were torn apart. We stood, frozen, lips and cheeks flushed red, our hearts thumping. Reality slammed into us, and our delicate illusion shattered. We stared at each other as strangers would, stunned by what had happened, by what we had allowed to happen. There was no time for words. Vigo, trailing a quick hand through his hair, snatched up a shirt hanging over the back of his armchair and jerked it over his head, while I, with no mirror to assist me, attempted to pat down my hair, straighten my clothes, and look as though Vigo's hands hadn't just been up my shirt. Searching my face, Vigo's eyes were still glassy, shining with desire, as I suspected mine were. His expression was questioning. I nodded, even as I tried to tame my erratic breathing, still my trembling hands. I was as ready to face Lee now as I ever would be. Chapter 31. Vigo opened the front door to reveal Lee standing on the porch in a long black anorak with an umbrella tucked beneath one arm, dark circles beneath his eyes. "Vigo," he said. I could hardly hold Lee's gaze as he glanced my way. "I'm so sorry for this." Lee held out a hand to me, and I had no choice but to brush past Vigo and take it, like an obedient child, allowing Lee to pull me next to him on the porch. His arm found my waist, and he held me against him. "Violet has been unstable since Porticue. The doctor said it could be a long time before she recovers from the trauma. She's been sleepwalking, going blank when I ask her questions. I didn't think she'd ever do something as crazy as this." Vigo didn't say a word. He stood, his face stoic, his eyes remaining determinedly on Lee. I averted my own gaze to the floor. It was torture to look Vigo in the eye now. Every fiber of my being still burned for him. My lips still tingled from his kiss. The scent and feel of his bare skin still tantalized me. Standing there in his doorway, his hair loose and mussed, eyes alight with a gleam that told me his consciousness, too, was still trapped living in the moments before Lee's arrival. He was temptation personified to me. I guessed I was the same for Vigo, given his refusal to look at me. I understand that you are bound to report my wife for this transgression, Lee said, giving my waist a tense squeeze. But given everything she's been through, would you be able to wait at least a few days? I fear what being taken to court will do for her mental health. There was a pause before Vigo's baritone voice replied, I cannot promise anything, Mr. Bertrand. Of course not, Lee said quickly. I was sure that even requesting Vigo to engage in obstruction of justice would put Lee on the line for punishment, too, if Vigo decided to report us. Once again, Lee went on, I'm deeply sorry for this inconvenience. I will deposit all the money I owe you to date. Just let me know the number of hours. You've been keeping track, I assume. As for the motorcycle she came with, can I figure out a way to pick it up tomorrow? If you wouldn't mind my leaving it here. You can leave the bike here, was all Vigo said. His response made me wonder if he was even planning to accept Lee's money in the end. Lee thanked Vigo again before pulling me away from the porch, down the stairs and into the rain, much lighter than when I had arrived, toward his second motorcycle, a dark red one. I resisted the urge to look back at Vigo as he watched us move away. Move away, when all I wanted was to race back and throw myself into his arms, wrap my legs around his waist, and lose myself in him all over again. But this wasn't a fairy tale. Vigo's in my story was everything but. I couldn't be sure how long Vigo remained watching us leave, but the light from the gas lamp on his porch still cast shadows as we arrived at the end of the dirt track. Only once we had joined the road and picked up speed did Lee break the silence. I think you owe me an explanation. I felt his tenseness beneath my hands as I was forced to hold on to him for support. I wasn't sure what to say. I had betrayed his trust and been caught red-handed. I figured there was nothing to say other than the truth. I couldn't help it. Couldn't help what? I had to see him. I wanted to stop him from showing up tomorrow. I didn't... My voice faltered. I don't want to do this to him. I expected a barrage from Lee, but instead he remained silent. And he stayed silent until we reached his home. Entering the hallway, he removed his anorak and hung it over the coat holder before slowly turning around. His face was ashen. His eyes flickered to meet mine. Do you... He hesitated, drawing in a breath. Do you have feelings for him? I swallowed. You could say that. What happened when you were alone in the cabin, before I arrived? I need you to tell me. I didn't say anything, and I never planned to tell him anything about the mission. As I said, my only intention was to keep him away from the lab, but then... I shut up completely because of that damn message you sent me. From pain and frustration rose anger. What did you mean by that message? I asked him, my gaze turning into a glare. Why would you assassinate him? You know the seriousness of this mission. I don't need to remind you all that hangs in the balance. For Matrix, for you, for me. We can't afford any leaky holes. Lee's tone had become quite flat, past anger and drenched in disappointment. Why do we need to use Vigo at all? I demanded. Why can't we pin this on Porticue? It's too late to change the plan now. The banquet is tomorrow. There's no way we could pull that off in a believable manner with such short notice. I'll do it, I stormed. I'll find a way. No, you won't. Lee said, there's no time, and besides, it would be against our queen's orders. Before you even arrived, she and Alistair agreed that Vigo would be the best person. Porticue is too easy and obvious a scapegoat. If you defy them, I doubt they'll fulfill their end of your deal when you return. My hands balled into fists. It doesn't make sense. Porticue might be easier to set up, but there would be fewer potential holes with them than with Vigo. Hell, those sick bastards might even be happy to step up and claim credit for the deed. Lee's nostrils flared. I could tell that it was taking a lot of effort to keep his voice calm as he replied, Violet, I repeat, it is too late to be having this conversation. Alistair has relayed the Queen's wishes. We cannot change everything at such a late hour. If you want her to keep her promise to you, you're going to have to go through with this. Exhaling in aggravation, I drove my fists against the wall. The sound made Samuel bark and scamper into the hallway. "Now I need you to answer a question," Lee went on. "How can I trust that you didn't tell Vigo anything? How do you expect me to believe you now?"
It took more than a minute before I could bring myself to reply.
"Well?" I breathed heavily. "If we're going to go through with this, you'll see tomorrow, won't you? You can listen to the conversation. You'll hear his response to my request, and you'll know that I told him nothing."
Still, his gaze remained on me, searching me. I dropped down to rip off my shoes, brushing Samuel away as he moved in to sniff me.
"So what actually happened?" Lee asked. "How did you explain your appearance?"
The way he was eyeing me, it was as if he sensed something deeper had gone on, almost like he suspected me of kissing Vigo. Was that jealousy that twitched his jaw? But I was tired of this conversation now. Tired of anger, tired of everything. I wanted to lose myself in sleep. After the workout Vigo had given me, I probably could even coax myself into slumber.
"Nothing happened that would be of any interest to you," I said. I made up a stupid excuse for why I was there, and we waited until you arrived.
Avoiding his gaze, I moved to push past him, but he gripped my arm and pulled me back, forcing me to face him.
"Did he touch you?"
Lee's expression was serious, his blue eyes glimmering in the soft hallway light.
"No," I replied through gritted teeth. But Lee wasn't buying it. "Are you sure?"
"I kissed him," I exploded. "What does it matter to you?"
His lips parted at my admission. "It matters to me more than you think."
"Well, it shouldn't,"
I shot back, brushing him aside and running to the stairwell. I felt hot tears brimming in my eyes. I did not want Lee to see them. I rarely cried and much more rarely showed it.
"Violet, wait!"
Lee called to me, but I ignored him. I thundered up the stairs to my room and slammed the door behind me. I threw myself against the mattress and buried my head in the pillows, letting them absorb my tears. My body shook in silent sobs. I squeezed my eyes tight. I felt ashamed to cry, even on my own. I wished that I was a robot, that I could simply do and not think or feel. That was what Lee required on this mission. A robot, not a girl. I staggered to the bathroom and splashed my face with cold water in an attempt to calm myself, then crawled back into bed and willed myself to sleep. But my door slid open before I could manage it. I groaned internally, wishing Lee would leave me alone, at least until morning. To my surprise, he had brought in a tray, and he set it down on my bedside table. Upon it sat a jug of water, a glass, and a small white sachet. He knelt by my bedside. I met his eyes through the gloom.
"Have some water," he said.
I was actually grateful for it. I felt dehydrated, and I finished the glass and replaced it on the tray. He refilled it, then picked up the sachet.
"I've brought you something that will help you push through tomorrow," he said, his voice somber.
I sat up in bed, staring at the sachet cradled in his fingers.
"What?"
I asked.
"A diluted dose of the drug we talked about. The emotion-suppressing drug. Binoxapane. This is enough to make an impact for the next 24 hours.
My eyes widened. This drug wasn't supposed to be publicly available yet. Lee must have gotten it from the lab. As wary as I was about this mysterious new drug, there was only one logical way to respond to Lee's offer. I nodded. Indirectly, it was exactly what I had been wishing for only minutes before his arrival. I would usually be the last person to want to give up control over my feelings and emotions. But now, I needed to.
If I was to survive tomorrow without breaking down, I had to swallow this thing.
Lee nodded back curtly before tearing open the sachet and handing it to me. I squeezed it over my mouth, and out popped a small, powdery pill, landing on the center of my tongue. Lee handed me a glass of water, and I quickly downed it. I sank back against the pillows. Lee stood up and gazed over me.
"You see," he said quietly, "I had a reason for asking what went on with Vigo."
He cleared his throat.
"Now, there are some known side effects like a mild headache, heartburn, and occasionally anxiety, but they won't last. You should be fine."
I closed my eyes. "I'll be fine." Lee's palm brushed over my forehead briefly before he collected the tray and left the room.
"Benexapine. What a good idea of King Maxon's, after all."
Chapter 32.
An additional side effect of the drug seemed to be sleepiness. I must have drifted off within 10 minutes of swallowing the pill, and by the time I woke up, it was almost midday. I sat up slowly in bed, rubbing my head and trying to make sense of what, if anything, was different about me. My head throbbed mildly. I also felt a slight churning in my stomach, though that was not necessarily a result of the pill. I thought of last night, of my visit to Vigo's cabin, of our kiss, and I experienced the strangest feeling, if it could even be described as a feeling. I remembered everything, of course, every detail of every motion that I had experienced then. Yet recalling them did not bring the same pain they had last night. Where longing and guilt had thrived was now a sense of hollowness, of numbness, a dull, monotonous ache. That pill was like a painkiller for the brain. My emotions were still there, somewhere beneath the surface, but I was not close enough to them for them to hamper my objectiveness. The pill didn't eradicate emotions, but smothered them, at least at the dosage Lee had fed me. My brain felt sharp, clear, alarmingly clear. I thought of the day ahead of me, of tonight, and I saw the goal with clarity. For the first time, I was able to separate feelings from duty, something Lee had urged me to do all along. I slipped out of bed and took a shower, then headed out of my room. I found Lee sitting in front of the computer in his bedroom, fully dressed, our eyes locked. He raised a brow, expectant.
"Well, how are you feeling?"
I shrugged.
"Not a lot."
"That's good," he said. "Very good." He offered me a chair next to him at his desk. He had been staring at the map of Petra City, and he pointed to one of the red dots. "That's Vigo. He's at head office. Let's hope he's not reporting you for last night."
I knew that Vigo wouldn't.
"So," Lee went on briskly, "let's go over the plan." He reached into his pocket and drew out his phone, placing it on the table. "During Vigo's lunch break, you need to call him and set up the appointment for this evening. You're going to say that you want to talk to him about last night. Don't give him too many details. The point is to pique his interest. You will say that you're going to be accompanying me to the lab's banquet tonight, and that you want to meet him outside the camera room. He knows where that is. There's a quiet, private space outside the camera room, so he won't find it strange that you are asking him to head there." I nodded. "You need to tell him that you will try to slip away from me and be there at 7:15 p.m., but request him to wait for up to 30 minutes in case you can't leave me that quickly. Promise him that you will meet him." Again, I nodded. "The cameras will watch him heading to the security room. Soon after that, the cameras on the ground floor will stall, and 15 minutes later, the first round of bombs will detonate at the back of the banquet hall." "First round of bombs?" I asked, frowning. "Yes," Lee said. "Plans changed in the last week. We will be blowing not just the ground floor, but also upstairs. Not only will this create an additional distraction, but it will choke the sky more thickly with smoke, which, as you'll see, will be important."
"And where will we be?" Up until the bombs go off, we will be attending the banquet, of course. We will arrive at the lab at about 6:30. Everyone will be chatting and relaxing in the lounge until about 7:10, when we'll head to the dining room.